I told you I'd be back. It's episode... That was my Schwarzenegger impersonation, for those of you that didn't get it. Yeah, my impersonations aren't very good. I used to could do a pretty good Bill Clinton.
I feel your pain. Let me tell you, I know how the workers feel out there. You know, I was just telling Hillary the other day, you know, my life really as president isn't really much different than that of the garbage man.
The hell does this have to do with anything? This is episode 246 of the Parish of the Patriots. I'm your host, Grandpa Dan. And I'm glad you're here. Most of y'all are return members of the congregation. Whether that makes you loyal members of the congregations or maybe masochists that you got to listen to this, I'm glad you're back and I hope you'll keep coming back. If you're new around these parts, we have a Christian-specific segment, which is really probably the only reason anybody comes back for the show. That's about the halfway part of the show. Don't miss it. That's really the whole point. Is the highlight, the masterpiece of the show. You're not gonna want to miss it. Trust me, it's not gonna be boring. It's fun discussion. as pretty much everybody out there does. This is, you know, I pass the plate around. This is the part where I ask you that if you get something out of it, put something in the plate. Don't be shy. Pay those tithes. We got Bitcoin. I got Bitcoin. All you got to do is go to the description page for the show on Radio Albin. You'll see I got a snail mail address. You don't have no excuse when there's snail mail. Anybody can address an envelope. Well, then maybe not. You know, I still have this mindset that anybody can write in cursive, and that is not the case. I might just be on to something. Anybody could fill out a check. No, maybe not. I don't know. A check. My younger guys are like, a check. What the hell is a check? Yeah, I was talking to somebody one time. This has been several years ago. I was talking to a guy, and he was whining to me about his bank account being overdrawn. And I'm like, how the hell did you get overdrawn? Because it wasn't a case of, you know, he intentionally spent more money. He was surprised. He was shocked to discover his bank account. And along in this conversation, I said, well, don't you balance your checkbook every month? And he says, checkbook? What do you mean? I said, well, you get a bank statement every month and you sit down and you go through your purchases. Now, I'm like everybody else. I use a check card now for just about everything. You know, but I write everything down in my checkbook every time I use my check card so that, you know, when I get my bank statement, I sit down and I balance my checkbook. And he's looking at me. He's like, no. And I'm like, well, you don't ever balance your checkbook, your account. No. I said, well, how do you know how much money you get in there? He says, well, I use ATM. It tells me I've got $2,000 or whatever, you know, in the account. People just don't know. I don't know. It's a different world. I'm a dinosaur. And if you're a dinosaur too, you know how to use snail mail. Getting back on track here. Got Bitcoin, got Monero, got email address down there. You can drop your notes. If you've got some altcoins, I'll take those two. Drop me an email. I can probably get you an address for that. It'd be all very much appreciated. If you get something out of the show, if you think the show sucks, obviously you're not going to put anything in the plate. You can, like, grab the plate and throw it across the room. I ain't contributing nothing. Show is crap. I don't think it is, but it is there. And the show is yours for free. I mean, obviously you cannot send anything. You're still going to get to listen. It's not like there's anything behind a paywall. But if you do get something out of it, you probably don't get much out of the first part of the show, but if you get something out of the Christian specific segment, maybe put something in there. Yeah, listener supported mailbag. Mr. T, GPD, there is no note included. Well, I can just make something up. GPD, Parish of the Patriots still going pretty good. I don't know about your attempts at the Daily Nationalist from Mr. T. I added that. I put words in Mr. T's mouth. You know, and I'm working on that. Y'all don't understand, the Daily Nationalist is a project for me. That is, you know, it's one thing for me to do the Friday shows with Sven, because I had Sven there to carry it, and I just sit there and say stuff that I think is funny. I have never been the type to do shows where you sit here and go through a news article. That is not my format. I'm completely, you don't understand, and I think, you know, in all fairness, I'm being completely honest, I think it's getting better. But please do understand, when you listen to the Daily Nationalist, I am a fish out of water. That is not what I have done. I'm sitting around reading news article, you know, a news story and commenting on it as I go through it. That is not my cup of tea. This is the format for that show. So, of course, obviously, that's what we roll with. But, I mean, I'm kind of out of my element. This show here, this is me in my element. So if you think this is bad, you're really not going to like the Daily Nationalist. But I do think this is not bad. I really do. I'm proud and happy of what we got here with this show. I'll be honest, I'm not always proud and happy when I finish recording a Daily Nationalist. I sit there and scratch my head and say, did that even make any sense? Is anybody going to get anything out of it? Hopefully so. I'm trying. I feel responsible for having this be as good as it can while Sven is gone, you know? This is my part to help him out. I hope. Thank you, Mr. T. That, by the way, you were like, how long is this listener supporter mailbag going to go? Well, even with me rambling already, I done got there. That's it. That's the listener supporter mailbag. Wow. So anyway, that is that. I know I was saying here a while back, and I don't remember if it was on this show when the Daily Nationalist shows. I'll be honest, they all run together. You know, they all run together. I sit here sometimes after I record, and I'll try to come up, you know, what's this show title going to be? And I'll come up with something I think's pretty clever, and then I start second guessing. I'm like, I think I've used this title before. It all kind of starts running together. I was saying here a while back, and like I said, I don't know if it was on this show or Daily Nationalist, but I was talking a little bit about the different ways things work in different countries in the West. Like, for instance, in the UK, they'll come out with these laws, like, specifically, you know, they'll say, well, I mean, they'll be vague intentionally, but they'll have a specific law. You know, well, if you're, you know, disrupting the democracy values of who we are, then you're supporting terrorism or something like that. Well, here in the US, you know, and again, I pointed this out before, but I thought I'd get into it a little bit again. You know, here in the US, it's different. You know, it is really kind of different. The U.S. kind of works on a different type of system. We don't have specific speech laws here. It doesn't mean that you have free speech, and everybody, unless you live in like in Iraq or you stepped out of a time warp from 30 years ago, you know, you're already aware of this. We don't technically have speech laws here, but they still clamp down free speech in other manners. Now, of course, obviously, we know that the government goes around and basically just tells the tech companies, we'll censor that guy. So they censor you and they say, well, we have plausible deniability. See, we didn't shut down your free speech. Twitter did. Google did. Whoever. Although, come to find out, they're the ones telling them who to ban and who to shut up. But as far as criminality goes, I was thinking about how this country, and again, this maybe is something that comes with age, but how, like, we have the criminalization of everything. Everything is criminalized. And I think this really reflects the fact that we're ruled over by people that have no legitimate right to rule over us, and they know it. They know it. You can always tell a system is illegitimate by how paranoid they are about the people they rule over. You know, a king back in the day ruled over his people. He wasn't paranoid about it. He didn't have to be. They were his people. They were his extended kinship. So he didn't have to go around being paranoid about things. But you see, this system has become exceedingly paranoid. They worry all the time. It's like they're obsessed all the time with what we're doing. They want to know. They want to spy on you. They want to know what you're looking at on the internet. They want to know who you're calling, who you're talking to, who, what kind of post you are, what kind of food do you buy, what kind of car do you drive, where do you live, how much money do you make? I had to go to a doctor's appointment not that long ago. I go to those regularly, the older I get. And it was a new doctor. This was last year. I'd say, wow, babe, it's last year when I was getting ready. I had to go see a urologist because I was getting all staged up for cancer surgery number two for the kidney cancer. And I go to see this urologist for the first time, and they give you these questionnaires. Most of y'all have probably been here and done this as well. They give you these questionnaires now at the doctor's office. And you're like, you got to fill out this deal so the doctor knows what's up with you. Okay, no problem. You know, and you're expecting it to be, you know, strictly stuff about your health. And they asking you all these other damn questions. They asking you how much money you make, where you live, anybody in your household smoke, anybody in your household drink. How often do you drink? Do you drink this many times a day? Do you drink this many times a week? Do you have any guns? Do you own guns? Yes, I kid you not. If you're living in Europe, you're probably like, wait, what? They ask you if you own guns, how many guns you have, where do you keep them in your house? As if the doctor cares about that. They're paranoid. That's information that gets fed to the government. They claim it's to keep up with statistics. Well, who's keeping up with the statistics? They're reporting that stuff to the government. Come on now. Who else would they be giving it to? Your doctor, your urologist, who's going to talk to you about who's going to be standing there putting the glove on, thinking he's going to stick his finger in your ass, and you're fixing to disappoint him and say, I didn't come in here for that. He don't care about any of that. That information's going to people who do care for some reason. But an illegitimate system is paranoid about those that they rule over. And they're constantly like just obsessed with it. You can see this really. It used to not be this bad, but it's gotten, of course, excessively bad now. Now, part of this, and because we have this, you know, it is morphed and become this kind of nanny state, you know. And like, there are so many laws. They have criminalized everything. And I was thinking how this flies in the face of the way the system works, the way the system interacts with other people in the global community, in the international community, the community of nations. If you think of nations, if you think of states, of governments, you know, as like people, as part of a community, I mean, they have to interact with their neighbors around the world. And you think of how this system treats us, the domestic population, and the way they interact with other people. They criminalize everything. One of the things I've noticed over these, they've really changed over the years, is how accidents are now crimes. And we have a failing system. Actual crimes, by and large, in this country are not prosecuted. You do videos all over the internet of gangs of teens, youths, I'm not sure what the acceptable term is today, that will go into these stores and just clear out the shelves and walk out. And nobody does anything. Nobody even bothers calling the police because police aren't going to do anything. Criminality, actual criminality, is not punished. And yet, there are laws against everything. And they will punish you for things that back in my day, back when I was young, were just considered accidents. And this doesn't seem to bother anybody. When you have an accident and somebody is killed because of an accident, and you will have people standing there saying the victim of this needs justice, but it was an accident. The person who harmed this person, that caused that person to die, didn't do it on purpose. It was an accident. It was literally an accident. It is not uncommon in this country now for somebody to be in a car wreck. Say somebody runs a stop sign and they're in a car wreck and the accident kills somebody. I mean, it's a tragedy, but back in my day, everybody involved, even the victim's family, understood, as sad as they were and angry as they were, at the end of the day, they understood it was an accident. That person didn't line up revving their engine and just waiting for them to get across there so they could smash into them. It was an accident. It's not uncommon now in an accident such as this that you will be charged with some form of manslaughter. You'd be looking at prison time for an accident. Now, they'll justify this and say, well, because a lot of times people are being reckless and they're being negligent. And let me tell you, I drive on American streets and people are not, this isn't a deterrent. People staring at their phones more than ever. People ain't paying no attention more than ever. So it isn't a deterrent. It's an accident. Now, you look at this in the context of the global community, to use their terms. You know, the government goes around, they go around harming people intentionally. You know, intentionally around the world. They will go to the other side of the world and literally, intentionally kill people. We have Veterans Day. We just had Veterans Day here in the U.S. We have Veterans Day. And, you know, everybody does the, you know, thank you for your service and hero worship for the military. And it's like what you're really celebrating is, you know, well, thank you for going on the other side of the world and killing people that had nothing to do with us. So on the one hand, we are supposed to worship and celebrate people for going and intentionally killing people. While on the other hand, domestically, if you're in an accident, they're going to send you to prison for an accident. Like, you didn't even do it on purpose. It doesn't make any sense. The U.S. goes around. The U.S. has this system, this government, they've not waged a war in my lifetime that actually had anything to do with me. You know, I mean, there's constantly just this constant conflict. The U.S. is involved in this mess in Israel. I mean, come on. If you're living under a rock, if you think American soldiers and American assets aren't involved right now, what the hell do the Palestinians have to do with me? Nothing. The people, you see these people, and I don't know if they're just morons or shills, but you'll see them in comment sections on the internet, and they try to make this like, you know, oh yeah, these Hamas terrorists, you know, like they're so awful. They have nothing to do with me. The Palestinians ain't got nothing to do with me. It's none of my damn business. And yet it is our business. They make it our business. Again, the government will go on the other side of the world and intentionally kill people. They have nothing to do with me. You know, look, wars are part of this life, part of this world. I get that. But at least back in the day, like before my lifetime, you know, back in the old days, wars made some sense, you know? You say what you want about the British Empire, but they'd go take over a country. It's like, we're going to come in here and we're going to wage war against you and we're going to steal your shit. At least they were upfront about it. Now they claim they're spreading the democracy value of who we are. They're still stealing these people's stuff. But at least back in the day, they were honest. It's like, we're coming in here and we're going to come in here and we're going to take your bloody stuff. Now, you're defending your country. You know, if some other country comes in and they say, we're going to come in and we're going to steal your stuff. And you're like, no, you're not. And you wait, get your army out there and you're literally defending your country. This nation does not do that. Ain't nobody. Well, I guess technically it's being invaded now and they don't care anything about that. They're on the other side of the world worrying about Palestinians. No, I'm not saying they should be like bombing people coming across the border. It's not what I'm saying at all. But I'm saying it's just funny that you do have people flowing over the border and they don't care anything about that. But they're obsessed about, well, now we got to worry about, we were supposed to be worried about the number one issue was the Ukraine. And that was the center of, you know, global democracy or anal or whatever the hell else. And now that's switched off and now everybody's putting, you know, Israeli flags on their profiles. That's supposed to be the most important thing now. And I'm saying that in reality, none of that stuff has anything to do with me. It doesn't have anything to do with you. It doesn't have anything to do with any of us. Somebody was like, waged an army, marched an army into your country. And they said, we're coming in here. We're going to kill you dudes. We're going to get up in your base. We're going to take your women. We're going to steal your stuff. The way wars used to be waged. A king would march his army out. He had the intention of taking your stuff. At least it was up front. That's a whole different thing. You're defending your country. I've lived my whole life with Veterans Day or Memorial Day coming around, and they're like, we got to thank our heroes over the years who defended America. They defended America. Boomer cons will sit here and get mad at you for saying that, and they'll gnash their teeth and say, how dare you? How dare you not love? I'll tell you what, if you don't love America, I'll help you pack. You can just get the hell out of this country, brother. Nobody, like I say, I've been on this earth for well over 50 years now. And ain't never been no military action that was defending America. It's always offensive. That's just a fact. It's just a fact. Look, we got to honor our heroes. They fought for their country. No, they fought for the government. They fought for an agenda. They fought for, I don't know, the arms industry, bankers, whatever you want to say. But it wasn't fighting for our country, like defending our nation against threats. What threats? What threats are the Palestinians? What threats are is even Russia? I mean, yeah, Russia's a threat in that if you try to bully them, they can actually fight back. What was the threat with Iraq? What was the threat with, you know, stirring up conflict with Yemen? What are any of these threats? There are none. It's just made up. It's just bullshit. It's all bullshit. Meanwhile, I'm just trying to stay on topic here. Meanwhile, you yourself can be minding your own business, make a mistake. Maybe a tree was growing up. You couldn't see, whatever. You made a mistake and you're in an accident. And you got to hope they don't charge you with some sort of crime. It was an accident. Maybe someone breaks into your house and you pull out your gun and defend your property and shoot that person. There's all of these videos and writings and articles written about if you're in that situation, this is what you do. Don't say anything to the police. You know, and they have to put this out because especially depending on where you live, you know, you think you're 100% justified. This asshole broke my window out, crawled into my window. And, you know, I splattered him back out the window. I gave him a one-way trip out of the window and out of this life. And you're thinking you're 100% justified. So when the cops show up, your first reaction is they're like, what happened? You're like, man, this asshole broke through my window. And I splattered his brains and I shot at an angle to make sure that crap didn't get on my new carpet. And you think you're in the clear. Oh, but you're not in the clear because they might decide that you yourself are the one who's committed a crime. They can say, depending on where you're at, the logic can become more twisted. In a state like Texas, where I live, it's going to be less twisted, but it doesn't mean the chances are zero, depending on what part of Texas you live in. If you live, heaven help you, if you live in a place up in Yankee land or in California, they're going to twist the logic on their head. Well, you could have just let the guy have all of your stuff and you could have run out the back door while he was rummaging through your house and called 911 and waited somewhere else for the cops to show up maybe 4 hours later. You didn't have to kill him. Let's ask the criminal's mother how she feels. You killed her son. He was a good boy. Didn't do nothing. They're going to twist everything on his head and they're going to charge you with murder. That could very well happen. So you have all of these articles, all these videos on the internet talking about if a situation like this happens and you have to defend your life, do not talk to the police. Wait until a lawyer gets present. Do not give them a statement. And it's ridiculous. No, it is. I'm not saying that the advice is ridiculous. What's ridiculous is we live in a society like that. We live in a society where when the cops are, look, and again, it didn't used to be this way. If something like that happened when I was a young person, back in the 80s, the glory days of the 80s, if something like that happened, the cops show up, they'd probably be like, well, thanks. You did a good job. Pat on the back. You expect people to have some common sense. You're not going to expect the cops show up and try to turn you into the criminal. But see, now you can't take that for granted. Depends on who the cops are, what kind of day they're having. What kind of bureaucrat down at the prosecutor's office? What if the district attorney is running for re-election, or if he's hoping to, you know, maybe run for Congress in a couple years and he needs to make a splash and make a headline? You can't use no common sense. They could turn you defending your life or defending your property. They can make that into a crime now. All the while they going over, they're the ones breaking into other people's houses. I keep sitting there talking about, I saw a story just this morning. I always skim the headlines before I start the show because, you know, like if a nuclear bomb went off somewhere, I want to know about it before I start recording the show. And I'm talking about rambling stuff you don't care about. And y'all like, when are you going to talk about the nuclear bomb that went off? You know, and I saw a story in like Australia was whining because they were basically over in China's backyard and they were like, oh, a Chinese ship went by and scared us. And how dare they? The West, the U.S., and all of its little puppet states, they're the one breaking in people's houses. The U.S. went in and kicked in Saddam's front door and blew his whole house up and killed all of his family. That would be the global equivalent, you know, if you made it like a comparison to normal people in normal life. The U.S. is the one that breaks into everybody's houses. What the hell does Ukraine have to do with the U.S.? No, nothing. They want to break in Russia's house. They in there and they're like, well, technically we didn't break into Russia's house. We just broke into their garden shed in the backyard. Well, you look out in your backyard and some guy's rummaging through your garden shed. You're going to be like, well, at least he's not in my house. I'll wait till he gets a little closer. U.S. is the one breaking into everybody's houses. They breaking into everybody's houses. And then if somebody threatens to even fight back, they're like, oh my gosh, they're a threat to us. Well, they're a threat because you're breaking into their house. It's crazy. They'd be talking crazy stuff like we got a human right to break into your house. We don't like the way you're running your house. We get a company. They actually even worse, you know, because it's not like they just breaking in these other countries just to steal their stuff. Although that is a part of it. It's worse. They like breaking into people's houses and then standing there saying, well, you got to start doing gay anal and you're not running your house at all. At least a burglar, he breaks into your house and then he leaves. See, the U.S. is worse than a burglar. They break into these people's houses and then they don't leave. They stay there and stand there and tell them, well, now you got to start doing gay anal. You need to start doing child trannies. You need to start doing all of this weird social crap. They won't leave. They in the house forever. The burglar moves in. He just takes up shop in your house. Tell you how to live. Meanwhile, for the domestic population here in the U.S., and I think it's important to talk about this because people in other countries, people that maybe are living in countries that aren't on friendly terms with the U.S., you know, and they thinking about the U.S. like it's the American people. And granted, a lot of the American people are morons and actually kind of support this stuff. But I think it's important to, you know, explain how we live under it. Well, they're going around breaking into people's houses all over the world, stealing their stuff, and then telling them they have to do gay sex. They're prosecuting the domestic population for complaining about it. They're prosecuting the domestic population for accidents. They'll prosecute the domestic population for defending their homes from someone breaking in. Maybe they do that because they feel a certain kinship with the burglars. Maybe that's where that comes from. They're looking at the burglar and they see a little snapshot of themselves. That burglar was just trying to bring you democracy and human rights. How dare you push back? We can't allow that. You're going to prison. It's not a stretch of the imagination, is it? I sit here and say, and then I stop for a minute and I think about things. And I think about these things and I think, my gosh, it's not that really a stretch of imagination. Like somebody could break into your house, demand that you do gay anal. And if you refuse to and defend yourself, the government, maybe they're looking at that and they're looking at that and they're going, oh my gosh, he's refusing the democracy values of who we are. We might need a law. But in fact, in Britain or in Europe, they probably have a law against it. How dare you? How dare you not accept the values of the democracy of the gay anal of who we are? Let that man squat in your home. What, do you hate democracy or something? It's a crazy world. It's a crazy world we live in. It's also crazy how time flies. It's time to get into the Christian specific segment. We're going to keep on rolling. We can do this thing. You know what to do. Get in there. Fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon here at the Parish of the Patriots. I was thinking a little bit this week about the nature of covetousness. You know, when do you cross that line between simply desiring something and coveting something? Covetousness is one of those things that's warned against in our behavior. We're warned against these things, you know, in multiple different places in the Bible and in multiple examples are given to avoid covetousness. But what is the difference? You know, you simply want something or you desire something. When do you cross that line? Now, I was just thinking about what makes something covetous? You know, what makes you covet something? Interesting example, I think, of the nature of covetousness. If you look in 2 Samuel chapter 13, you read, and I'm not going to read it here, but you can read, so many of you are probably familiar with the story, but you had Ammon. And of course, back then the king had many wives and concubines. So you had all of these, basically what we would consider half-brothers, sisters, first cousins, all these people living in close proximity. And of course, back then it was not uncommon for these people to have relations and take these other, what we'd call relatives, you know, near relatives, they would take them in as spouses and whatnot. But you had Ammon and his sister Tamar, and he coveted her. It says in the Bible he loved her, he desired, he was vexed because he wanted her so bad. And this is, I think, a prime example of covetousness. He desired her so bad, he was literally making himself sick because he desired her so bad. Well, things come to pass, and he winds up setting up a situation, and he rapes her. Now, what's curious to me, well, what's interesting here is once he rapes her, he desires her so bad, he wants her so bad, and this leads up to him just throwing caution to the wind. So he sets us a situation, and when he's about to do this, she says, "Don't do this." She says, "Go to our father, go to the king, and ask him for me, and he will probably give me to you as a wife. You know, you don't have to do this way." But he disregarded her words, and he raped her anyway. And now, after he rapes her, and after he has her, and he has spent some time just wallowing in this desire for Tamar. Once he has her, it says, once he has her, I mean, like the moment after the deed is done, it says he hated her. He hated her more than he desired her before, you know, that led up to all of this. So you had just this, just like flipping a switch. He went from just being just completely enamored with her, obsessed with her, just after the deed was done, then he hated her. Now, of course, like is often the case, this incident winds up having, you know, further reaching ramifications down the road. But that's not what we're going to get into today. I wanted to focus on, you know, how he went from this desire, which is obviously an example of covetousness because he was so obsessed with her, to just like right after so immediately despising her and hating her, and why that is, and that gets into the nature of covetousness. I believe one of the things that really contributes to covetousness, to coveting, is the unattainability of that which you desire. No man covets what he already has. If you're driving around, I don't know, an old Buick Le Mans, you're driving around a Le Mans, that's your car. Well, you don't wake up in the morning and say, "God, I really wish I had it. All I can think about is a Buick Le Mans. I want one so bad." You don't covet it because you already have it. Or for instance, you got an old, I'm loving using old car reference. You got an old Oldsmobile Cutlass and you think, "Man, I'd really like to upgrade to this Buick Le Mans." And you go out and you're looking at old Buick Le Manses. But for you, it's an upgrade because your old Cutlass is a real claptrap, you know, hoopty. And you're looking at Buick Le Manses and you can afford it. You know, you're looking at it, it's like, well, these are very reasonably priced. I can, you know, sell somebody my old hoopty Cutlass and I can get this Buick Le Mans. So now you're just down to picking out which one you want. You know, you look, I can afford this. You can afford it. So you're just picking out what color and what engine package you want or whatever. The point here is you're not going to covet it because it's attainable. You can afford it. You can buy it. It's within your price range. It's attainable. I believe one of the things that's really central to falling into coveting something is we covet that which we cannot attain. And again, there's multiple warnings about the nature of coveting in the Bible. Do not covet your neighbor's wife. Why would you covet your neighbor's wife? Because of that unattainability, because you can't have her. That's what makes her so desirable. The idea that you can't have her, that's what makes you start creating this, I tell you what, you know, my neighbor probably has it made. He's got this hot wife and, oh man, every day, you know, he's hitting that like every day and it's probably just, and you start creating this lie in your mind that your neighbor's living some kind of fantasy life because he has this, what you perceive as a hot wife. Of course, it's not like that. It's like the old meme, the old adage I heard years ago, you know, the picture of the smoking hot woman. And it says, you know, no matter how awesome she may look, no matter how hot she may be, there's some man somewhere that's sick and tired of her shit. But you see, you're creating, and when you're coveting, you're creating this fantasy, this lie. If only that guy's living, if I had that, I tell you what, my life would be perfect. So what Amon did, he had created this idea. If I only had her, everything would be perfect. But it was the idea of unattainability. That's what made it such an obsession for him. When he's overcome with it and he's getting ready to take her, she points out to him, "Look, go to the king. He'll probably just tell you, fine, make her your wife." But see, he wasn't interested in that. The appeal was in the fact that he perceived her as unattainable and he was going to grab it for himself. Coveting removes your sense of reason. A reasoning person would sit here and say, oh, well, yeah, if I really want her, go to the king and say, hey, and again, this sounds weird to us because they're related, but that's just how it was back then. There is a lot of different things. We'll get into all that now, but he could do that. But see, what made him so obsessed with her was the idea that it was forbidden, that he couldn't have her. And then, of course, once he just goes ahead and takes her, immediately after, he puts her out and he hates her worse than he desired her. Why? Because now that eliminated the notion of unattainability. See, now he's got her. Now he just went and took her, and now he hates her. It was the idea. That's what feeds into it. The idea of it's unattainable. You know, she's just out of my reach, just reaching for it. Of course, when you let yourself become consumed by something such as this, it is, of course, a form of idolatry. A lot of God's laws are interrelated, you know, which you're not supposed to have any gods, you know, besides the Lord. But then at the same time, if you covet something, you are creating, you are basically idolizing something. And we see many instances of this, and if you stick with the element of unattainability, there's any number of videos you can watch on YouTube or whatever, and you know, where people are going around and talking to women of various ages. I saw one where a guy was on he was like a comedian or something, standing on stage, and you know, they'll do this interacting with the audience thing, and there was some middle-aged woman in the audience, and he asked her, well, why did you get divorced? And she's like, well, I don't know, she had whatever limp reason for divorcing her husband, and he says, well, what would be the ideal, who would be the ideal man for you? And she stammers around, and then she basically says, well, I don't know, because I haven't found him yet. You see this when they talk to young women. They'll say, well, what kind of man, you know, what kind of man do you deserve if you were to get married? And they all have this ridiculous, you know, he needs to be 6'5" and make at least $3 million a month and be able to lavish me in luxury because I totally deserve it. And it's like it never dawns on these people that such a person does not exist. The woman who's in a marriage and winds up divorcing her husband, and again, you can find videos of these women. They're usually taken off of TikTok or whatever because people, for some reason, want to broadcast their entire personal lives to the world. And you'll have these women there, like sitting there, like, I was married to the perfect man, but I just wasn't happy. And, you know, I mean, a lot of people would say he was perfect. He was a good father to our children and this, but I just wasn't satisfied. So I divorced him, and now I'm out here now, and I'm looking for somebody who really, they're looking for somebody who doesn't exist. You will see that they're looking for somebody. They're looking for a man that doesn't exist. You know, and if he did exist, it's not attainable. You see, that's why they covet it. Because it's the unattainability. She's not coveting her husband. She's already got him. She's not coveting the guy in her social circle that, you know, they're close enough in, I don't know, income, social standing. They work together. And she could ask him, hey, would you like to go out sometime? And he would gladly go out with her. She doesn't desire him because that's attainable. You see, coveting comes in when it's unattainable. So she creates this fairy tale prince that's got to be so tall and have all of this money and, oh, he's got to be really physically fit too, and check all of these ridiculous boxes that doesn't exist. And she starts wrapping her entire life and making life-changing decisions. The woman who decides to divorce her husband because she wants to find this man, she's overturning her life and the lives of other people, her husband and her children, because she's desiring, she's seeking out another man who doesn't exist. He's not out there. It's a lie she has created in her mind. And again, there's many such instances where you can look at something, and if you look at it objectively, you can see covetousness, coveting. Covetousness, I think that's correct, but it just doesn't sound right rolling off my tongue. But I think it's one of the things that's easy to fall into. And it's one of these things that as believers, we need to be on our guard about, because it's easy to fall into it. You know, you start looking at something, it's like, you know, I'd like to have that. Again, being, I don't know, anything. You know, it could be whatever. It could be, I don't know, a car or a house, whatever. And it's easy to fall into, you start attaching, putting this like emotionalism behind it instead of saying, well, you know, looking down saying, well, what I need is, I need it, you know, going back to the car analogy, I need a better car than what I have now. So you go out and pick out a $100,000 Mercedes-Benz when you're making $25,000 a year. Well, that's not realistic. And but you keep looking at pictures of this $100,000 car over and over, and you start thinking, man, and you're watching videos of it, and you're thinking, my life would be so amazing. And pretty soon you start telling yourself, you pay attention to your internal dialogue, the things you say to yourself, and you'll catch yourself. You start telling yourself, if I only had that car, and you start imagining that if you had this $100,000 Mercedes, you start imagining how happy you would be. You would happy. In fact, your life would be complete. If you just had this car, then everything else you got going on in your life would just fall into place. That car would fix everything in your life. And you've probably fallen into this in some way, shape, or form on some part of the scale at one time or another in your life, because I believe we all have this part of our fallen human nature, and it's something you can fall into. You start attaching all this emotional. Now, time helps you work through all things. And as believers, we're always, you know, falling into these things isn't the problem. We always have to recognize them as quickly as we can and start beginning to correct them. When you catch yourself falling into that, you know, give it a little time and work through that and realize, use your reason and realize that, wait a minute, it's just a thing. Realistically, if you had this $100,000 Mercedes, you would still just drive it to work and back. Just same you're doing with your old crappy Cutlass, you know, your crappy Oldsmobile. You actually wouldn't be driving it anywhere else. If you had that new Corvette, you know what you're going to be doing? You're going to be driving down the highway at 70 miles an hour, the speed limit, same as you're doing in your 1988 Oldsmobile. That's the reality. And start using your reasoning to start tearing apart this idea. That, oh, if you just had this, if you just had this thing, if you just had that woman, if you just had that car, if you just had that house, that fancy brick home that's out of your price range, if you just had, none of it's realistic. You use your reasoning power to start, instead of sitting around telling yourself, oh, if I had that, everything in my life would be, no, it's not. It's actually, if you had it, it really wouldn't change anything. You would just have a more expensive car. Not, but see, that makes sense to you. It makes sense to us talking about this when you're not caught up into it. When you're caught up in the desire, like Amon was, you're not using reasoning. You're just going, you're giving yourself over to emotion, which is something else I believe we constantly work on as believers, is taming our emotions. You know, I mean, you're not going to ever be an emotionless robot as part of who we are, but you don't allow your emotions to control you. And I think that's one of the things we strive for all the time, is to always be master over our own emotions and not let them have mastery over us. Amon had abandoned all reason. She tries to point out to him, you don't even need to do this. You're going to ruin my life. You're going to ruin your life. You're going to cause all of these problems. You could cause a family war, you know, in the kingdom. And all you got to do is go to the king and just ask. But see, he wasn't interested in that. He was caught up in the obsession. He was caught up coveting. His emotions had completely taken him over. We always want to strive to not do that. We always have to be striving to be in control of our emotions. Again, you're not going to make them go away. Don't try to pretend like I don't feel anything. Well, I mean, you do. You have to recognize them. But just make sure that, you know, that you're riding the horse and the horse isn't riding you. You got to be the one in control. Now, I think it's another thing that perhaps relates to this is a twisting that we get. And you have to remember, when you look around at the world today, we live in a godless nation. We live in a lot, it's not even a nation, but we live in a godless country. We live in a godless world. And because people are separated from God and have abandoned God, I've said this before, they create all of these weird moralities. They create all of these false gods to go chasing after. And I think some of the coveting, I think it's a twisting of our desire to be closer to God. We want to be happy. We want to find a sense of being to where we want to find ourselves. We want to get somewhere to where we look around and we find ourselves in a place where we're happy, where we're content. And there's nothing wrong with that. The twisting and the lie, the inversion, comes when we attach that to a person, an object, a thing, money, whatever it is that you fall into covetousness. You start off from something that's an honest, you know, spiritual desire to get into a place to where we're content, where we're happy, where we feel fulfilled. There's nothing wrong with desiring that. We all desire that. That's part of why we're here, is our desire to grow spiritually. But you see, it gets misplaced and we wind up attaching it to an object. And I believe you're going to see more. We see more and more of that today than in generations past, because the people are further away from God now than they have been for some time. And because they're so far removed from God, they actually have a spiritual desire. They don't realize it's a spiritual desire, but to feel fulfilled, to feel content, to be in a place where they feel like their life is in order and makes sense and they're happy. And they attach that to an object when it's supposed to be, this is actually should be a part of your desire to become closer to God. To get closer to God. Instead, you attach it to an object. And again, this relates to how coveting is a form of idolatry. Because you have attached that desire to be closer to God, that desire to get in a place of contentment, that desire to get to a spot to where you're happy and you feel fulfilled and your life makes sense, you have attached that to an object. That has become your idol. That has become your false god. Because you're only going to find anything close to that contentment, that satisfaction, that hope. You're only going to find that in Jesus Christ. You're only going to find that in the Lord. And that's our entire purpose, of course, of being here. I always come full circle to what's the meaning of life. We are here to spiritually mature and to go to get closer to God, to understanding Him, to be as prepared as we are for the real life that is to come. That is why we're here. That is the nature of our existence. Where we are spiritual beings, and people don't understand this. People are focused on this world. When I say people, I say most people are just, they're so focused on this world as if this is everything, and it's not. And you wind up with things, again, there should be a natural spiritual drive, this desire to find yourself in a place of contentment. You're going to be content in the presence of the Lord. That's a spiritual drive, and it gets misplaced onto worldly things. We're spiritual beings. We're spiritual beings. I often think, you know, where is the kingdom of God? You know, how is the kingdom of God at work? Where is it at? Where is this realm of eternity where time doesn't exist? And it's all around us. I always say it's closer than you think. You know, people always say, you know, they think about heaven and they're looking up at the sky and they're imagining it. This is a way far off thing, you know. And it's not. It's right here where you're at. We are spiritual beings. The only thing binding us, I'm going to tell you something. The only thing binding us in the temporal realm are our bodies. We're spiritual beings, but we're in these bodies. These bodies represent what ties us to the temporal realm. The day of the Lord is as soon as you die. And you say, well, when we see the day of the Lord, I guarantee you we're going to see the day of the Lord. You will. You know, there's going to come a time when, yes, people are like going through their lives and all of a sudden Jesus appears. But when you die, when you finally shed, the second you shed this body, it's like a cocoon. I was saying about this the other day. Our bodies are what binds us to the temporal realm. We're like a cocoon. You know, you got a caterpillar and it goes into a cocoon. And when it comes out of the cocoon, it's supposed to be a butterfly or a moth or whatever. You know, that's the way it's supposed to work. I think it's kind of another example of how God gives us a snapshot of how he works and how we're supposed to relate to him in the things in nature. This body, if you think about it, this body is nothing more than a cocoon. You're in this body to grow, to become a butterfly or a moth or whatever you're supposed to be. That is why you're in the cocoon. But most people, they look at the cocoon as that is their existence. They're going to be in this cocoon forever. You know, the world outside, when the caterpillar becomes a butterfly and comes out of the cocoon, I mean, the world the butterfly lives in is right there. Is the world, I'm going to say this a different way, is the world that the butterfly lives in farther away than the world that the caterpillar lived in or the world that the cocoon exists in? It's right there. They just got to come out of the cocoon. Does that make sense? The only thing, in other words, the spiritual realm, the realm of the Lord, the kingdom of God is right around you. It's not way off. It's you're basically surrounded by it. You are in the temporal realm, yes. But the only thing, I'm feeling my skin. You can't see that. I'm feeling my skin. This skin, this physical body that you are in, this is the container that keeps you in the temporal realm. This is it. That's the only thing. That's the thread holding you to the temporal realm. And the moment you step out of the temporal realm, you are in the eternal realm where time doesn't exist and you see the day of the Lord. If you're going along and you're suddenly killed instantly and unexpectedly, you will see the day of the Lord. If that happens today, you will see God today for you from your perspective. Now, from the people around you that are still here in the temporal realm, no, you've got, as it says in the Bible, you've gone to sleep with your fathers. You know, from the people still in the realm of time, you've gone to sleep with your fathers, and someday we'll see you in the kingdom of God, or we'll see you on the day of the Lord. But from the person who dies, it's instant for them, because once you are ripped out of this temporal realm, this body, once that ends, you're now not in time. This is the only thing binding you here. This is it. You got one thread holding you in the temporal realm, and that's this body. Yet we're supposed to be spending this time growing closer to the Lord. And the vast majority of people are wasting their time. They're not turning into butterflies in the cocoon. They're in the cocoon. And they're just sitting there wallowing around in there. They're refusing to that example only goes so far because it's all involuntary for the caterpillar. It just does it naturally. It goes in there and turns into a butterfly and comes out. You know, but for us, you know, it takes effort. It takes work. We got to put this work in. We have to funnel that desire in. And see, in that sense, it's a healthy desire, isn't it? We have this desire, this drive to be closer to God. And again, I think a lot of that takes the shape of, I'll get this spit out here in a minute, takes the shape of this desire to get into a place of contentment, a place of happiness. There's nothing wrong with that. But we have to always recognize that desire is directly related to our desire to be closer to the Lord, to not be separated from God, to be closer to Him, to understand Him, and be able to look around the world and say, oh, I understand. I understand what God is doing. I understand what the Lord is up to. You know, that should be our spiritual drive. Because the closest we're going to get to any feeling of that contentment while we're in this mortal realm is gaining a greater understanding of the Lord and gaining a greater closeness, you know, getting closer to God. That's the only way. You're not going to find it in a thing. Again, that desire to be content and happy is healthy. There's nothing wrong with that. The trouble comes when we misplace where we're going to find that. And when you look around the world today, the vast majority of people have no clue. I don't care if they go to church on Sunday or not. They got no clue. They're running around. They're wasting their time. The precious little time you get, God has given us this gift, and they're wasting it, running around, caught up and consumed by the things of this world, jumping from one thing to another, getting swallowed up with covetousness, with coveting. This covetousness still doesn't sound right to me. They're getting swallowed up. They're swallowed up by this desire to have this thing, and then the next thing, or this imaginary person out there that's going to somehow bring them this sense of fulfillment and contentment. And like Amon, if they were to attain, on the off chance that they managed to find a way to attain it, they quickly come to hate the very thing because it didn't bring them what they wanted. And instead of looking at that and going, well, I was obviously misguided, which would be the reasonable thing to do, that you'd use your mind to do, they'll just jump to a new thing. You know, they desired, if I just had this new boat, and then they finally got the boat, and it's like they were so excited when they got it, and pretty soon it's just forgotten and thrown over there. Instead of looking at that and going, well, you know, I've obviously funneling my energy into the wrong place. No, they just attach it to something else. Well, I've got the boat now. Now I need the new car, the prettier wife, or the whatever the hell. They just keep going from one thing to another to desire. Always remember, when you feel yourself starting to do this, remember, it's just a thing. Whatever it is you're starting to think about and you're thinking, if I just had that, it's just a thing. Cars, houses, boats, whatever it is that you get tempted into covetousness, coveting. It's just a thing. You can overcome this with your mind, with your reason, with your mind. And of course, as Christian believers, we're exercising this constantly, and it gets easier for the lost out here. These people just running around, got no clue. You know, they don't even know where to start. For us, we can recognize when we're falling into this and get back control of it. You know, get back control and understanding that it's just a thing. It's not going to miraculously make you happy. That woman you're looking out there and thinking, if I had something like that. No, you'd be sick and tired of her shit in no time at all. No, it's not going to bring you happy. That person's not going to bring you happy. No, darling, your imaginary Prince Charming who's 6'5" and is buffed out and makes $2 million a month, he doesn't exist. He doesn't exist. You're coveting something that's just a figment of your imagination. You're chasing an illusion. You're chasing a lie. And at the end of the day, the only place you're going to find any sort of form of contentment, of satisfaction, of purpose, is gaining a greater understanding of the Lord. But see, that takes work, and people don't want to do that. They're not into work. They don't want to put the work in. That doesn't sound good. If I could just spend enough money and get this thing, I would find that in this thing. And you sit there and say, no, you're not. You're not going to find it in that thing. What you're going to have to do is get closer to the Lord. Well, how do I do that? Well, okay. It's a lifelong, wait, what do you mean a lifelong project? It's a lifelong progress project. This is something you're going to work on your whole life. You're suffering because you're working. You know, you're putting in effort. There's going to be times that you're frustrated and feel like you're not getting them. You put in that effort and God will reward that effort and you will find something similar. You will start gaining some of that feeling of contentment and satisfaction as you gain more. You're starting off from zero. You're going to take what you can get, you know, little grains at a time. But you build on that and you get closer to God and you look around the world and the things that everybody else are running around and confused about and upset about and getting emotionally twisted about and coming unglued about. You gain enough spiritual understanding where you understand those things in the context of what God is doing, in the context of how the world works and the patterns that Satan follows, the pattern that God follows. All of it starts falling into place more in your mind. You're not getting as upset as everybody else because you understand the world around you. And in that, you find a certain amount of satisfaction and contentment. But again, it's a lifelong project. You're never going to 100% attain that in this life. It's not possible. Don't let that trip up your faith. But I'm going to tell you, it's not possible. You're not going to get to a spot where you're just 100% satisfied in life. You get as close as you can as you gain an understanding of the Lord. But it's always, I always think we go through all of these things and trying and our faith gets tried and tempered. And it never ends as long as we're in this body. As long as we're in this body. The final trial of your faith, if you live out your life in a natural way, the final trial of your faith is when you face death. When you are facing that moment, you're going to be birthed out of this this body that keeps you tied to the temporal realm, the thread that keeps you in this temporal realm. When you look at that head on, and it's like, okay, it's over now. The cocoon is fixing to come off. And that is the final, I believe that's the final trial of your faith. When you face that, it's like, okay, I've lived my life up to this point. Now, we all hope as believers, or we all strive, that when we face that final trial of our faith, that we'll have matured enough. You know, if we waste your entire life, if you waste your entire life chasing worldly things, and then that final trial, because everybody gets the final trial, when you get the final trial of your faith, when you face the fact that you're fixing to leave this mortal realm now, this body, you're fixing to leave this body, the one thing that's keeping you here, you're fixing to step out of the suit. You're fixing to unzip the suit and step right out of it into the real life. You know, if you've spent a whole life building your faith and your understanding of God, it's going to be a lot easier to face that final trial than somebody who's spent their entire life running around chasing the things of this world and wasting their time. Wasting their time. It doesn't matter if everyone in the world says that's a successful person. They got money, they got a car, they got a nice, blah, 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 this worldly crap. All that will be gone. They've wasted their time with that. They're completely unprepared when it's time to face that final trial. They're completely unprepared. Our goal is to build up our faith so that when we face that final trial, we're prepared. We understand it. It's going to be easier. It's still going to be a trial. The unknown, I mean, you have faith, but it's still the unknown. You're stepping from what you're familiar with, even if it's unpleasant, into what you're completely unfamiliar with. You heard about it, you're fixing to be there. Well, you know, that's where you want to build up to, where when you face that final trial, the point is, it never ends. And when you're in this mortal realm, it never ends. And ultimately, everybody faces that final trial of your faith when we face leaving this realm and entering to the real realm, the real life. I always say this is just the prequel. This is just, it's just the introduction. It's just a prequel. The real story starts after we leave this life. I'm going to wrap up on that note. I hope you enjoyed today's show, especially the Christian specific segment. I really hope you got something out of it. And that's my hope. And I hope, of course, as always, that I'll see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.